in jail. And when he was released, we basically packed up my apartment and headed straight to Texas. I called in and resigned, and the head of HR said, you know, she said that she was surprised to hear that I was quitting because she thought that I was going to promote. And it shortly...
You were going to be promoted?
Right, right.
Shane, we only have a minute, and I just wanted to ask if you could talk about how you yourself were affected by being a guard, from being a prisoner in Iran to being a guard here, and your changing mentality.
That the psychological aspect of working there ended up taking most of my energy. You know, I went in there as a reporter, and over time, more and more of my attention was focused on the job of being a guard, which was extremely difficult. I was working in a unit with 350 prisoners with just one other floor officer, and I saw myself over time harden and become more and more strict and really just numb to the needs of the prisoners. I was focused on how to get through and how to survive in this really dangerous environment.
Well, Shane, I want to thank you for being with us. We'll link to the whole issue of Mother Jones Magazine and the amazing reports, video reports from James West. Shane Bauer, award-winning senior reporter at Mother Jones, his most recent article is titled My 4 Months as a Private Prison Guard, chronicling his time as an undercover correctional officer at Louisiana's Wynn Correctional Center, run by the Corrections Corporation of America. Shane is also co-author of the memoir, A Sliver of Light, Three Americans Imprisoned in Iran. And that does it for our show. Happy birthday to John Randolph. Democracy Now! Has a news producer and a senior video news producer position open. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'll be speaking in Chicago on Friday night. Go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. This year, the festival will be held July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Everyone will need a pass this year to see such artists as Dr. John and the Night Trippers, Liv Warfield and the Special Horns, Curtis Salgado, and many more. More information about passes, the performers, the role of the Oregon Food Bank, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale. Yay! This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio. Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We're accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Wednesday, August 10th. The sale will be held in mid-August. Stay tuned for details. Please, no home recorded cassettes, VHS tapes, or mold. If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email Ani at volunteer@kboo.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Today is June 27th, 2016.
No, it isn't. Where did the month go?
Oh.
Where did the month go?
It went the way that all months go.
Oh. So you mean to tell me that we can expect our month to kind of look like the checkbook, you know?
Well, then, if that was the case, my month would be over by the 7th.
Well, at any rate, checkbook or not, you're listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 if you're in points east, such as Hood River, Oregon, and I think we still hit White Salmon, Washington. Points south is 104.3, and everywhere is KBOO.fm.
And this is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Charles Prescott. And
I'm Celeste Carey.
And for those of you who do not know or who are just waking up, you know, we mentioned that this is the June 27th, the end of the month. It is the month of June. Those who are familiar with U.S. politics know that in the month of June...
Oops. Okay, is that me or you?
I think that's me.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Technology.
Those of you who are aware is that at the end of the month of June, the Supreme Court's come down with decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court ruled this morning, 5-3, and struck down the Texas abortion law, which limited access to abortions for, made it more restrictive. So it was 5-3, which is somewhat of a surprise. Supreme Court Justice Kennedy ruled with the four moderates, and so it was 5-3. And just a reminder that, you know, votes matter.
Votes matter. Well, you know, what an interesting juxtaposition and confluence here, because we're talking about Texas here that was the recipient of that decision. And just like in merry old England, Texas had thought to secede, you know, from the Union.
Had thought?
Well, that, I'm hoping that they're rethinking.
Well,
that's been the rhetoric, you know.
It's been the rhetoric.
It's been the rhetoric, and they had thought to secede from the Union. But unlike Texas, England has seceded from the European.
Seceded. Well, mm-hmm. we'll see what happens. So mm-hmm. actually, you know, with Great Britain, and most of Great Britain voted against it, but I guess, I mean, the countries of Scotland, Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
And the city of London
yeah.
voted to stay in. But it's, you know, we're laughing, but I think it certainly has had some impact already, impact on the economy of Europe and mm-hmm. causing questions about what will be the future of Europe. And it has perhaps some continuing impact on this side of the sea.
Well, I know that various stocks have had their plummet, and I know that China has devalued its currency again. So one wonders, okay, what is going to be the effect with relations here? And of course, one of the folks that was interviewed and whose opinion was sought was the presumptive candidate, Trump.
The presumptive Republican.
I can't say Republican because some folks are actually voting to take back the delegate votes for Trump. They want to unhinge it. You know, they want to sue for that.
Just like some of the voters in Great Britain want to take back their votes. Oh, never mind.
No, we didn't really mean that. We thought this was maybe like, you know, just a protest vote to say that we weren't happy about stuff. We didn't realize it actually meant we were going to leave.
Votes matter.
Votes matter. They do. So anyway, we thought we would entertain some ideas and some conversation about a couple of topics here. One of them is your thoughts on the votes. Either, you know, you were happy to hear what happened in Texas, or you have your issues about it. And then we got a couple of spaces here for you to talk about how you think the Brexit, the British exit, is going to affect the States, if at all. And, you know, we really need to think about how we are intertwined globally and how things are very tightly interwoven, because one of the other concerns coming out of the idea the Brexit is that it affects how we're going to be able to implement the climate change resolutions.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Share your thoughts on the Supreme Court decision, the decision by the voters in Great Britain to divorce the rest of Europe.
To rock the boat.
To rock the boat. And speaking of the presumptive Republican nominee, I thought it was interesting that I saw some video this weekend that he was on the he arrived in Scotland at about the time of the vote. Early, mm-hmm. You know, early in the week, he had no idea what Brexit was, and sort of followed by time he got to Scotland, he was very enthused about it and saying, "You all voted to leave and to take your country back, and we're going to do the same thing in the United States." You know, standing in Scotland that voted to remain a part of the union. So,
he's not the smartest.
His handlers have a lot to work with.
Mm, yeah, and in his case, I guess handlers is an apt term. I get to speak my opinion just, you know, a little bit.
You?
Yeah, I already said this. For him, handlers is an apt term.
An apt term.
That's as deep as I'm going right now.
Okay.
I think it speaks volumes. Yeah.
So also in relations, because, you know, a lot has been happening, as you suggested, and so we want your thoughts, particularly about, you know, we talked about elections and the elections here. Now that the primary seasons for the Democratic and Republican voters have ended and things are settling down to the summer low.
Mm-hmm.
Your perspective on this campaign season, and what have we learned or not learned still need to learn about that. So I was, you know, people often have these political conversations mm-hmm. around a dinner table with their friends or what have you, and you shared with me something the other day about, you know, people who would go out to eat and maybe have conversations with their friends and a little sign that I think, was it on the table?
No, these are, and I'm sure some people who go out, it doesn't matter how often, if you go out once in a while, might not have noticed that on some of the restaurant menus, or maybe there's signs on the table, or maybe you've heard the scuttlebutt because you've been keeping up or you work in the industry. But the fact is that a lot of cities have been kind of jockeying back and forth with this whole concept of tip, no tip, in light of various states increasing the minimum wage to what they call a livable wage. And you know, here in Portland, there was a lot of conversation about having a livable wage and what the state is going to do to increase it. But even increasing it to $15 is pretty much a joke, because housing is astronomically priced. And then recently, City Council just voted to increase our water bills, as if finding an apartment wasn't going to be hard enough. If you do get one, you won't have water, trash, or sewer, you know, because you won't be able to afford it. But people were wondering, well, I have a small business. How am I going to afford to pay this? And some restaurants had decided that they're going to try to have some equity by raising the salaries across the board, so that the back kitchen staff and those who are not front staff that wait on people have a chance to have a better wage, and get rid of tips to kind of equalize it. And of course, there was a big fallout. Some cities actually tried. I think Seattle tried for a little while, and San Francisco tried for a little while to be no tip. And then there are some restaurants in town that also tried no tip. And then, of course, there was some outcry from some of the workers who said, "Okay, that's not working for me. I want my tips back." You know, and I'll go ahead and take my $2 or $5 or $10 an hour. So you're finding some tips that, I mean, some establishments that are saying, because we want to pay our employees a livable wage, we won't increase the prices, but there'll be an obligatory, that is mandatory, that means you gotta pay it, 3% increase to your bill.
So surcharge.
Yes, surcharge. Okay. And so people are looking at that and going, what the heck? And it makes sense, and I'm sure to some folks, and to others it's a sore spot, but we're curious as to how you feel about it. So you can give us a call at 503-231-8187, but you don't have to comment on all three of them. Just pick one topic and we'll have a conversation. We've got a buffer full of callers. I guess we struck big dirt. So let's go to our callers. Good morning, Sherry. You're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to talk, they're all interesting topics to me, but I have a thought about the Brexit vote. So I think voting to leave the EU because you don't want anyone telling you how many immigrants you have to take in, or the anti-racist reasons, that's awful and terrible and disgusting. But I think, like, I want, as a small business owner in Portland, I wonder how many small businesses really benefited from membership in EU. And I think they can be, I think the EU is too big of a behemoth of a corporate institution, just like I think the United States is too big of a behemoth, and you can't control all these little countries that had their own special flavor and things, and their own cuisine and their own rituals and their own country, you know. I'm not doing a very good job of articulating it, but sure. I was sort of happy that they disassociated from EU, and I think what would be the worst thing if the EU dissolved? Then we'd go back to having Europe with a lot of, they're all still Europeans, that's the name of the continent, and what's wrong with having these individual countries, and then they trade with each other, and they get along, but they're not under the spell or the purview of a giant multinational corporation.
So let me ask you, you said you're a small business owner? Hello?
Sorry?
Oh, did you say you were a small business owner?
Yes.
I was wondering, then address the issue, because I think one of the reasons for the European Union was to make sure that trade is easier.
Right.
So you don't have many, you know, different rules and regulations from one country to the other. Did you see that as a possible advantage to the European Union?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how the trade rules work. I know that people used to freely go from one country to the other, and you'd, if you lived near another country, then you probably traded with the other country. As a small business person, it doesn't do me any good that we've got these giant trade agreements with Indonesia or Japan. I'm not going to sell anything. I'm not going to be exporting anything. I just sell local vegetables.
Right.
I sell vegetables to small restaurants and local wholesale things. So as a real small business owner, I'm just questioning it is what I'm saying.
Yes.
I question how it's really going to impact the small people, the day-to-day people, if they're just doing business and they're selling to the people who come into their shop or they're providing services to people who come into their shop. And like I said, if they live on the border of another country, then they probably traded with them anyway, regardless of any formal trade agreements.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for your thoughts.
Yes, thank you much.
I just would like to hear
other responses.
Yeah, other responses to that. So thanks, you guys. Thanks for your show.
Thank you for calling.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. First of all, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, and I'm going to tell you why. I agree with a lot of what he has to say in terms of immigration. I believe that the Supreme Court, when they tied, I was happy about that. I'm going to tell you why. If you look at countries that have a strict immigration policy, like, say, Korea or...
I'm assuming you mean South Korea, right?
Yeah, South Korea.
North Korea.
And Iran.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello? Michael? Hello? Oh, well, call back.
Call back. You're in the midst of telling us about...
strict
immigration
policies. And why you want to... I can't even get that out of my mouth.
Vote for
Trump.
Well, in the meantime, while we try to get Michael back, let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, John.
Hello. On the Supreme Court decision about the abortion issue in Texas, it was 5-3. Who were the three dissenting people?
The
usual
suspects. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to harp on Chief Justice Thomas, and why does he think he has to, you know, replace Scarface Scalia? That guy. Chief, Clarence Thomas. He's always voting, always voting redneck, all the time. No, I mean, he doesn't even say anything. Just sits there and just cheeses, smiles, like some kind of idiot. I mean, I'm sorry, but this guy, since he's been on the Supreme Court, it just sits there, you know, like a puppet.
Well, he doesn't sit there. He will issue his thoughts. You know, he will make a report.
And there.
But, I mean, this guy's worthless.
Well, he's been there for 25 years. He's there's been reports that he might retire, and also the work of the Supreme Court justices is not what they say on the bench, but what happens in the negotiation in the back room. So have no idea what happens there. So
but I would bet you 110% of the time, it's always against poor people.
Well, no one said he was a champion of the rich, so yes, I can see your point there, and I'm glad you're kind of unpacking what you had said earlier so that we get a little bit more of an idea. But so you're not too pleased with Clarence Thomas, okay?
Well, my fantasy is if Hillary gets in there.
Oh, Hillary Warhol Clinton?
Yeah, Hillary Clinton. My whole, fantasy that she appoints a black lady to sit right next to Clarence. That's my fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm very vindictive because this Supreme Court in the last 20 years has done nothing but devastating damage to this country. And, you know, I think vengeance is served cold.
Okay.
And that's just my whole opinion because it just, everything's been going downhill ever since George Walker Bush or whatever got in there in the early 90s. So I see Obama kind of a breath of fresh air. At least he brought in a couple people that, you know, actually, you know, showed some intelligence or some kind of, what do you call it, equal, you know, justice for, you know, even, you know, for anybody, not just for rich people. But that's all I can say.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, so he just commented on the Supreme Court and what he would happen, what he hoped would happen if the Democratic nominee is elected and who she would appoint to the Supreme Court, which reminds me of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was asked, what does she think about how many women will be enough on the Supreme Court?
And she said?
Nine.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
I think that would be great.
I just love that point of view.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we're waiting for you to have conversation with us. 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Good morning, Michael. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
Somehow we got disconnected. But anyway, my point was those countries like Korea or Iran, they're not having mass killings like what's going on in America or over in England. And that has a lot to do because they don't have open borders.
Okay, now, you really got to help me. Okay, first, when you say they're not having mass killings, there's a lot of people that are dead in mass graves in both of those countries. And actually, I should say in North Korea specifically and in Iran. So you got me a little bit lost here when you said there's no killings. What do you mean by that?
Not from immigrants sneaking in there killing up people.
Okay, right now, you know that our last few killings have not been immigrants sneaking in here, right? You know that, right?
No, their parents was immigrants.
Oh, good golly, Michael. And so were our parents, quite possibly, at least half of my parents.
But
okay. So anyway, you're thinking that if we have stricter immigration laws, that we won't have as much killing in this country. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Also, what I'm also saying is that because people can just walk into America, they come when they do that, they get benefits. They get cash, they get medical, they get everything.
Okay, and you've done your research on this, Michael, because we've talked about this on this show, and that's not the case. You need to stop watching Fox News, okay?
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
So, Michael... Michael, before you ask a question, I just wanted to comment a little bit in terms of what you said about immigrants walking in and getting benefits. That's not true. They are not eligible for anything. Social Security, food stamps, things that we might think that we would expect them to receive. So that's inaccurate. But now you can ask us a question.
Okay, my question is, have you guys ever went around and looked at the homeless camps?
Oh, yes. Yes.
See any Mexicans in those camps?
Yes. And? Nah. Your point being?
Nah. My point being that there are Americans that's out there.
It's not just Americans, Michael. I have gone and looked. You know, I love getting your calls, so sometimes you bring up some great points, but right now... Brother man, you know, we're talking nonsense right now. I have seen who's in these camps, okay?
Yeah, and, I'm not talking nonsense. You know, the reason that Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee is because most Americans feel the same way that I feel when it comes to immigration, and we all can't be wrong.
Okay.
Oh, well, you know, thank you very much for that. I mean, like they say, about 9 million flies, too.
What's that?
There's a saying that just because there's a lot of people doesn't mean that they can't all be wrong. They could be wrong, all of them.
Well, let me ask you a question. Why is it, you know, when these people come over from Mexico, why can't they come and they protest the Supreme Court decisions? They're out, But why didn't they do that in their country? Why didn't they stay in their country and fight for that stuff?
Okay. Well, Like I said, you're not tracking today, and I can't answer.
I'm asking a question.
Right, okay, but here's the thing. I personally, even by watching the news or reading papers, have not seen mass protests by illegal entrants and by people coming into this country illegally protesting Supreme Court decisions. I haven't seen that. Now, maybe I missed it.
The Mexicans
are protesting what? What are they protesting?
They were protesting the decision where they deadlocked. The Mexicans were protesting that, the ones that came here
DACA.
Illegally.
So you were talking about people who were protesting the the Supreme Court ruling last week in terms of DACA, in terms of children of immigrants.
Okay, now that I can understand, and I would, because if their children were born here, then they are citizens.
But children who came here.
Yeah, and children who came here and they didn't have their papers, okay, I got that. But that's the one thing that would make sense for them to protest, which is something that upsets their livelihood. And you got to think of it this way. If the United States goes to their country and undermines their economy and their political stability, and the only place they can get a decent job is the country that oppresses them, they're probably going to come here. Because I confess, if I were born in Mexico, and I were, or say I was born in, what's one of our, like American Samoa? Okay, and that's an American quote-unquote possession, and I can't get a decent job because this country's imperial overreach is making my country broke. Yeah, I'm coming here because you owe it to me because you destroyed my country. So that's why they come here, and it makes sense to me. And as a person of African descent, you think you'd understand the desire to have a better life where you are. Now, as a person of African descent, I know that you've also been upset because we haven't made the kind of gains that you think that we should make. That makes perfect sense. But then you have to recognize that if we don't hang together, we're not going to get anything. They're going to keep us separate. And we do better finding ways to partner with folks who have a lot in common with us.
Well, the thing about it is that when these people come here, first of all, they have no clue historically about America.
Oh, that's not true, Michael. Okay, look. No, okay. Thank you for your call. No, you need to do, brother, you're not tracking today. I don't know what it is. Have an extra drink of water. But thank you for your call. We're going to move on.
Before we go to our next caller, our previous caller talked about the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen noted that he issued a very strong dissent. He wrote a bitter dissent for himself, accusing the court, his fellow justices, mm-hmm. of eroding the Constitution. Justice Thomas, the silent one, wrote, "The court has simultaneously transformed judicially created rights like the right to abortion into preferred constitutional rights, while disfavoring many of the rights actually enumerated in the Constitution." Thomas wrote, "But our Constitution renounces the notion that some constitutional rights are more equal than others. A law either infringes a constitutional right or not. There is no room for the judiciary to invent tolerable degrees of encroachment. Unless the court abides by one set of rules to adjudicate constitutional rights, it will continue reducing constitutional law to policy-driven value judgments until the last shred of its legitimacy disappear." So Brother Matt has been doing some work. He's angry.
Yeah, he's angry.
Let's go to Francis.
Yes. Yes. Good morning, Francis. You're on air. Hello.
Francis might be waiting because we were talking so long. Francis, are you there?
Well, I hear noise in the background. Okay, let's try another caller then. Good morning, Ruth.
Hello?
Are we, like, magically dropping calls here?
You're on the air.
Okay. Okay, good morning. Is this Adam?
Hello, can you hear me now?
Okay, this is Francis. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Something's okay. Wrong with the click on or whatever. It isn't just for economic reasons that people are fleeing countries such as Honduras. It's because
that's true.
Of persecution.
That's true.
And they're actually fleeing for their lives.
That's true. So,
and the Timothy McVeigh was homegrown. Remind people of that. He was homegrown.
Who was? I'm sorry, I didn't get...
Timothy McVeigh.
Oh, McVeigh.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Thank you. But I want to get back to Supreme Court Justice Thomas. When he wrote that opinion, that dissenting opinion, he was referring to, I believe, something to do with either the recent ruling,
yes,
or the having to do with religious freedoms. But he wrote just recently the majority opinion to allow evidence to be okay, even though it was obtained illegally by racial profiling or whatever.
Yes.
And Justice Sotomayor wrote a very eloquent dissenting opinion on that ruling. So, and Justice Thomas, I've read a lot of his opinions throughout the years, and his logic is faulty. So I'm not sure where he's at. But I think it's quite alarming that he wrote the majority opinion on the recent ruling, which pretty much says racial profiling is okay.
And, you know, which is, I mean, he would be an interesting case study. First, I would love to see what happens when he have family gatherings.
I don't understand it,
I haven't read his
opinion on this most recent ruling, but I'm going to read it, and I'll probably be quite disappointed. But
why are you disappointed, Francis? I mean, what were you ever expecting out of Clarence Thomas that you should be disappointed?
Well, I just feel that, you know, as you were just saying to Michael, people of certain descent, you'd think that they'd have a little bit broader view of things, but maybe not. I don't know.
But he has not been a friend of folks of color from the beginning.
Ever.
From the
right.
beginning.
But yet at the same time, in his own personal story, he talks about being
victimized
because of dark skin.
Dark skin,
right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about, being disappointed how he doesn't put the two and two together. But what I wanted to speak on was the recent so-called sit down in the Congress for a very faulty law. I can remember Democrats being concerned about these no-fly lists and how people get on them without any kind of due process and everything. And now all of a sudden we're having a sit down to say that those people shouldn't be allowed to bear arms, even though they've had no due process at all.
Right.
And I would feel that perhaps a more worthy sit down would be to demand that we have a hearing to appoint a Supreme Court judge now, rather than waiting until see who gets elected.
Well, and unfortunately, Congress is not moving ahead. You're right. It would make sense.
It would be more productive sit down, I think, to demand that we allow the current sitting president to appoint a Supreme Court judge. People say they don't see the racism involved, but I do, and how they're just totally obstructionist. They're not allowing anything that our current president wants to do to even be heard. And the sit down that they did to me was just up front. It didn't really mean anything. It didn't accomplish anything. It was sort of for their own promotion, it seems, because if they were really serious about what's going on in this country, the sit down would have happened 3 months ago when the Congress is refusing to even have a hearing to consider the president's appointee or nominee for the Supreme Court justice.
Well, I think you raised several important points. The first point that you raised that I agree with certainly is in terms of the sit down for the proposed legislation. I think I would prefer if they're going to sit down in terms around legislations about restrictions of guns. I would prefer if the sit down was about banning all semi-automatic weapons rather than, as you suggested, a very very unconstitutional law. This no fly list, which is really
arbitrary
without
I don't understand why the people that did that, not too long ago, it seems that a lot of them were against these no fly lists that had no due process involved, and some people didn't even know they were on the list,
right? So the
choice was really kind of, I didn't get it. And in the meantime, we've got judges who think it's okay to raise your profile. So,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on here, but something not too cool. And to me, this whole Trump Clinton thing is a sideshow to have us not really look at the real issues, because Clinton is no better than Trump in a lot of the issues that we're concerned about what he's going to do. She's already done. So, that's something I know you guys can't really talk about as far as candidates for president, but I am dismayed, and I'm going to see what happens in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I haven't given up on Bernie Sanders yet, but if he doesn't, if things don't go well in Philadelphia, then I'm thinking that the Green Party's going to get a whole lot of new members.
That's a good thought.
Okay.
You guys
take care. All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Give us a call. We're talking about several things this morning. We talked about Brexit. We talked about the Supreme Court ruling and Supreme Court justices.
We talked a little bit. I don't think anybody wants to touch that whole thing about tipping and not tipping. Maybe we'll save that for another
day. We'll save that for another day.
Living wage. That would be interesting to discuss all the living wage barriers.
Yeah. Well, and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a call, 503-231-8187, and share with us your wisdom. Let's go to our next caller, Adam.
Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
Yes, good, you're there.
Yeah, I just I tuned in when Michael was speaking, and so I wanted to address that. I hope he's still listening. I wanted to address this concept that Mexicans are coming to America. I want to remind our cable listeners that from California to Texas used to be part of Mexico.
Yeah, a lot of people
America
know that.
Took that land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. So when America took that land, the Mexicans did not magically disappear. They've always been here, right? Mm-hmm. And they have every right to be here as anyone else. And something that I think a lot of people don't consider Mexicans as Native Americans, but
thank
really
you
are
for
a
saying that. I was just thinking that. That's what I tell my friends. That is the case. It doesn't matter whether you are from up in Alaska all the way down to the absolute tip of South America. You are an American, and those are indigenous people, which makes them Native Americans.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
I totally agree with
you.
They
were here before white people, and if you want to say that they don't belong here, then you're supporting an oppressive regime that took their land from them in the first place.
I totally agree. You got no argument from me. Especially being mostly Native American. I'm right there with you. Well, thank you for your call and for making that point. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. I thought that Michael's comments were interesting because, as he stated, that his thoughts are the thoughts of many people.
And well, with regard to
immigration.
Immigration and Trump.
And I thought it was interesting to hear the language he used and the arguments he used and the broad generalizations. So they are coming to and these are my words, our country. Mm-hmm. Mexican, which I suspect he meant people south of the border, regardless of south of the U.S. border, regardless of which country they're from. And I think you highlighted the fact that economics drive many people to do things to protect and feed their families. I think to have a discussion of, around immigration, that we need to broaden it in terms of education, in terms of who are the people of moving, why are they moving? And this also goes back to the Brexit discussion and the concerns about immigration in Europe, which is a whole different thing than what we're facing here in the United States. But
well, it's different only because of the degree of severity.
Well, yes, the degree of severity, the nature of the immigration, and also because of the European Union in terms of borders.
Right.
This is different.
But well, go ahead and finish your thought.
So I think it opens up the need for a continued broad discussion around economics, around immigration, and around human rights, and find the intersectionality among those things.
You know, the only thing that I wanted to add was that, and I'll make this brief for our callers, is that the economic severity to many people is just as severe maybe as the political severity, because one of the things that comes from some of the towns in Mexico and some from South America as well is the crime related to the drug trade, which makes their lives very tenuous and dangerous. And so when we're trying to justify who can come and who can't, you know, it's all relative in the long run. It's all relative to their perception of survival. So whether you're fleeing from a small town in Mexico who has no economy, no trade opportunities whatsoever, and so there's nothing to do there to get food, to get money, to get education, or whether you're coming from a South American country that has drug trade that sometimes is, well, supported by a U.S., it's relative. I just want to survive is the whole thought. You know, I want my people, my family to survive.
And related to that is to recognize for those who are engaged in these discussions the real fear and economic insecurity that many people living in the United States feel.
Yes.
And therefore feel the need to find why are they not prospering, and therefore it's because of those other folks. And who those folks are changes over time.
Yeah.
But there's an economic insecurity that we need to recognize and not just assume that people are just
coming over for vacation and
Just coming for vacation, but also mm-hmm. that people who want to build a wall, that those people are speaking out of fear, a legitimate fear and insecurity they face.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of grace on both sides of the arguments I'm arguing for.
Yep.
Let's go to our next caller. Good morning,
Good morning, Ruth.
Hi, I'm back. I applaud KBOO for shedding a light on what is not picked up by mainstream media. That's why I'm so glad to be a member. What I was saying was way back in the 80s when I was teaching with some British people and other Europeans, in the Christian Science Monitor, which is a pretty apolitical paper, Arthur Young is an accounting firm that goes everywhere around the world, and they said, well, the Greeks are just Arabs in pants. And actually, I think the EU hasn't worked. They can't handle or even addressing the refugee crisis on anything but gut-level racist reaction. And we have a world that isn't facing up to how racist we are as a species. So England, I think, in their vote was saying the EU isn't working and it doesn't support us. At that time, in the 80s, early 90s, I was reading the International Herald Tribune, which comes out of Paris, and they were saying the purpose of the EU underlying was to underrate the pound sterling. Well, stock market worldwide will wobble for a while. It always does when there's a big shift. But I think there's more than the immigration issue on the surface in that Brexit vote. So I heard on OPB recently an interview with a small businesswoman, and she said the trade rules of the EU prohibited her company from being able to sell their product in Southeast Asia and the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So she was unhappy with the EU restrictions economically. Again, thank you for your show and the opportunity to share that it's more than just anti-immigration in that vote, I feel.
All righty. Well, thank you, and thank you for sharing your points, too. You are listening to More Talk Radio. This is your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the metro area.
And coming up this morning at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. Desiree Halliger interviews Imogen Williams and Loan Berman, two of the 21 activists who were arrested at the Vancouver, Washington rail blockade protest on June 18th. Denise Morris reads from responses to Britain's vote to leave the EU. Laurie Mercier speaks to Michael Hellquist about this Wednesday birth control brigade in downtown Portland. And Jan Hocken and Mike Snediga reviews the TV series The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Let's go to our next caller. Jackson, good morning.
Good morning, Cecil and Celeste. Celeste, I was listening to you closely. I have to take issue with what you said about comparing the Brexit, British exit from the EU to Texas wanting to secede from the United States. That's like trying to compare potatoes to citrus fruit. The last caller was really closer to the truth about what's going on in Britain and the Brexit. The immigration thing is just a small part of the type of pressure a lot of the Britons are getting from the EU. And a good point to explain to people is that the British and all of the countries in the EU are not getting any representation in the EU government. So that means they're getting no representation. They're complete technocrats and bureaucrats who are determining the future in everyday way life of complete strangers. And there's a disconnect between these bureaucrats and working class people. Property value has skyrocketed for the working class people, just like it is in Portland, and it's getting unattainable. There was a generational gap in the voting. The older people voted to exit. The younger people wanted to go. The older people understood the Thatcher administration. They understood the changes that they've gone through. And everyone's pushing for a third party worldwide. People are just really upset with things. They're tired of this binary system. And they're wanting the working class people. I'm not talking about the elite banking people and the courtiers to the king. I'm talking about working class people are starting to get a little upset, which is why a lot of people are giving Trump a second look. they don't necessarily have to like them. They'll probably hold their nose when they vote for them, but at least they'll know they'll get something started. All right? So there's a lot going on with Britain. There are other countries, as a result of what Britain did and the decision, are ready to leave, or at least they're thinking about it, and it's destabilizing the system as a result, as you guys already know. So this thing is more of a working class pressure cooker. The working class people are pushing back at an unconscious level. All right, so Texas to the Brexit, I mean, there are issues. Like, for instance, you remember last year, was it, when Scotland was going to break away?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Now, you have, they've unofficially cut Ireland in half, kind of like the Dominican Republic. You got Northern Ireland and you got Southern Ireland, right? No one's made the connection between Catholicism and the Church of England and Protestantism, and how this thing is much older than the United States of America.
Well, first you're breaking up, and second, I'm quite aware of that. I'm very aware of that being one of the fundamental reasons, beside the fact that there's also, again, a political representation. But
there are listeners who aren't aware of this, however, need to be told.
Okay, got it. But, okay, I've only got a few minutes left, and I wanted to just kind of touch on, because I appreciate your call. I wish you'd have called earlier so we'd had more time to talk, but essentially this. One of the reasons why Texas is looking at secession is similar. And that is, they feel there is a lack of representation, that their views...
But they're still getting it. They're still getting it.
Wait a minute. Okay, now, I listen to you. Hey, no, brother man. Hey. Hey, I listened to you. I didn't interrupt, okay?
All right. Well, I don't mean to interrupt. It's just...
I know.
In there, so for the listeners, this isn't overlooked. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, but what it's still going to be relevant. I'm not talking about the scale of the similarity. I'm just talking about there is a similarity. Okay. And
that's why I was at task with you, but keep going.
Okay. But my point being is that when you are looking at some of the folks who are dissatisfied in Texas and want to separate, a lot of them are just ordinary people as well, working class people. I'm not denying the fact that it was working class people who were dissatisfied with the effect of the EU association and membership. I'm talking about just generally the people who had made the vote for the reasons they did. Now, we didn't even get a chance to talk about the regret that a lot of people have had, because they thought they were making what was amounting to a no confidence or no protest vote, which kind of supports what you're saying. But
I won't chalk that up to propaganda. We're going to have to let time tell exactly what's going on the world scale.
Okay.
With our banking institutions, the EU, and this globalism that's having a negative effect on the working class person. That's
well, you get no argument from me on that. I totally agree with how the way globalism is playing out is having a negative effect on all of us who are working people.
TPP, right?
Pardon?
TPP.
Hello, TPP, NAFTA, GAFTA, and whatever else is coming down. I'm right there with you.
And this is negative affecting the regular person, and people are pushing back at some level. So I'll let you guys take over from here. I just had to call in. I was just boiling when a lot of there's so much that's not being talked about and that people are completely overlooking. So, yeah, I'll let you guys go and do your thing. Have a great day.
All right. Well, thank you for calling and refocusing on the fact that we are talking about how this affects all of us as working class people. It is important. And Cecil and I have not forgotten. But it is time to turn over the airways. Coming up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. And I believe next weekend is the 4th of July. So Cecil and I will be... we will be celebrating our various forms of independence, and we suggest you look deeply and find your ways to express independence from corporate ties, but total dependence on humanity and what we have to offer each other.
That slave owner, Jefferson, said that you need to create a revolution every 20 years.
Every 20 years. I think it's about every 10 now.
So thank you.
Yes, and stay tuned to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. Once again, with our partners at Oregon Community Media, KBOO will be broadcasting the four-day festival in the Portland metro area, across the state from Astoria to Ashland, and from Andrews to Antelope, and around the world at KBOO.fm. Remember to support your local food bank as you tune in to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, to enjoy the 29th annual Waterfront Blues Festival.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. But first, the KBOO Evening News produces a one-hour newscast every weeknight. We need writers, editors, reporters, and more to make this grassroots community resource happen. Are you interested? Would you like to try something exciting? Training in writing for radio, interviewing, field recording, and audio editing is all free of charge, but you have to go through the KBOO volunteer orientation first. Email Lisa Loving at newsdirector@kboo.org.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning.